All right, you guys, happy Tuesday. I am joined by Milo Yiannopoulos. Do you want to know why? Because it feels like a MAGA funeral. We are both wearing black. A lot has happened in the last 24 hours, really, honestly, since Trump reassumed office, and it's time to talk about it. And at the end, you do kind of want to go back to the beginning. Welcome back to Candace. No, he didn't. He was fantastic. Okay, all right, you guys. So there's a long backstory. We have so much we actually need to talk about, but I want to suspend that for a later episode.
Yes.
Because I actually contacted you weeks ago saying, Milo, I want to have you on. Wanted to go through the history. Yay. But for my audience, my newer audience, and these are people that are on the left, and now I think we're all kind of coming towards the middle and realizing that everything is corrupt and fake and gay. I want to let them know you're actually kind of a piece of my backstory. I didn't know you, but when I was a liberal and on the left and found myself falling down the hole, meaning I realized actually I agree with conservatism and I kind of like Donald Trump and I was kind of scared to say that as a black person in America, I found your writings. You were a Breitbart and your writing was excellent and you were talking about the ills of modern feminism. You absolutely blew up. And I would say that you are original MAGA, meaning I think of you, I think of Steve Bannon, I think of all of these people when the whole world was like, Donald Trump will never become president of the United States. You guys.
We didn't agree.
We did not.
There were about seven
agree.
Of us when the rest of the country was afraid even to admit who they were voting for. Yeah.
And who would you say were in that original MAGA group? I think of you and Steve Bannon.
Yeah, I think
and
Mike Cernovich would be an example.
Absolutely, Mike Cernovich.
I think that Baked Alaska was there up with us front row in some of the talks. My buddy Pizza Party Ben, if people remember him from the if you were a little bit more online at that time. And you know, really, it was a very small group. I would say Stefan Molyneux, who's just got back to Twitter, who's I guess he's an online philosopher, I guess you would say. You know, really, it was a very small group. And I got a compliment from somebody high up in the campaign in 2016 that I think was excessive. I don't think it's fair, but you know, he said, "Oh, you're one of the seven people who put him in office." I said, "Come on, grow up." But what I think he was getting at was that at a time when even Americans were afraid to admit who they were voting for, although they did in huge numbers, there were, you know, seven or eight or nine of us or whatever who were out there every day.
Vocally supporting
saying,
him.
Saying, it's okay. Even if you don't admit it to your wife, do it in the booth. And fortunately, we did persuade them. And so, yeah, I mean, I was there when he came down the golden elevator that
right.
Other people kind of saw in retrospect. And I sort of, at that time, I was kind of, what is going on here? This is exciting. This is interesting. And then when he came out and said...
Why were you there? You were there when he came on the escalator. How did you get there? What's
I was
the
invited
to that?
By a friend
okay.
Who said, I think you're going to want to come along to this. Somebody who works at a hedge fund. And at that time, you know, if you were sort of vaguely somehow connected to the Trump organization or maybe whatever, people kind of had an idea that Trump was going to do something, right? Because he'd been trailing for many years that he was going to run for president. And people sort of, he's going to make an announcement of some kind, either that he is or he isn't. And so a friend of mine invited me and said, you probably want to be here for this. And it was the kind of person that only says it when they mean it. So when he started to speak in that unfiltered, extraordinary way about immigration, and in that announcement, when he right out of the gate said something along the lines, you know, they're not sending their best, the Mexicans are rapists, this is the guy that people have been waiting for that is going to speak like they do. This is the guy that they've been waiting for that is going to speak directly, plainly, honestly, persuasively, and in that demotic mode, in the manner in which we speak to each other over the kitchen table about the things that are freaking them out. And nobody else is going to do it. All right, I'm in. And for most of the last 9 years, I have been.
That's correct. And I think that's definitely what drove me toward him. I liked the fact that he spoke what felt like he was being very honest. He understood how to speak to a blue-collar worker to say, look around you, look at the roads, you've got immigrants coming in, your jobs are being taken, and I'm going to fix it. Build the wall was the chant. Notoriously,
and he had that
the
reflexive
racist
thing, didn't he? That atavistic understanding of the working man. And we thought to ourselves, well, he's a construction guy, isn't he? So he's been on building sites his whole life, and he knows how to talk to people who lift and stack and make things for a living.
Right.
And it was very exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting. And so you supported him, presumably, through the first 4 years?
I did. And I, you know, a lot of people who supported him and did a lot for him weren't necessarily recognized for it in the first administration. But I think that the supporters like me, you might say, more colorful, hot to handle maybe, kind of supporters fall into two brackets. You've got the people who are just desperate to be next to him at all costs, mm-hmm. even if it's not the right thing for him. And then those of us who are content with the victory and happy to chill. So I never really made much of an effort to kind of engage with the administration the first time around. By the same token, they didn't really, you know, whatever. A lot of us in the same boat. And that wasn't such a big deal. But I think that many of us felt that first Trump administration was not exactly all that we were hoping that it would be. And not really what we were expecting from candidate Trump that time around.
What would you say? Because I honestly think I was still very much asleep. Mm. And you're correct. I remember Ann Coulter. She was someone who very early on supported Trump. And then she sort of said, this is not what I...
had to talk her into it.
You did? Okay, yeah. She said, this is not what I wanted. About him,
and then they had a meet... By all accounts, they had a meeting in the Oval Office that did not go well. Mm. And unfortunately, I don't think they got on particularly well, which is a real shame because I think Ann has a reasonable claim to having written the manifesto for his first victory, which is Adios America.
And what do you think changed when he got into office? Or I guess, what were you disappointed in that first term?
We didn't see much of the campaigning Trump. We saw a lot of the old business as usual Republican Party, you know, tax cut bills passed and this, that, and the other. And it didn't feel like what we were building up to. It was almost sort of, it was anticlimactic. It was almost as though, you know, we had this, I mean, I walked into the Trump Victory Party on the evening of the election in 2016. And everybody in there was ashen-faced. There wasn't a person in there who believed that he would win, including him, except me, a friend of mine, Mike Marr, and two other guys that I brought with me. And we were like, we're it! And we looked around and the room was like a funeral. Not dressed as snazzily as we are today. But I didn't understand it. I was like, what's wrong with you guys? Like, you know he's winning, right? When the New York Times has to put out a poll that says that Hillary's got a 98% or 96% chance, you remember that, of winning, you know that's like they're in real trouble. And nobody got it. The president himself was, you know, when he was spotted, was looking like he just wanted to get the evening over and done with and go home. When he won, I think everybody sort of caught up to the excitement and realized that actually, oh, maybe my vote did make a difference, you know, back at home. But then the administration, it didn't seem to deliver on any of the promises. We didn't really get any movement on borders or great victories against universities. I mean, at that time, remember that we had all been talking a lot about campus rape culture and the gender pay gap. These are the sorts of things that people were talking about then, all of which had been exploded and exposed and discredited. But all those people still seem to remain in power. And all those institutions didn't seem to be losing very much by the fact of Trump being president. In fact, if anything, they seemed to be doing quite well fundraising while he was in. And he wasn't really stacking up the victories that we were expecting. So I don't think I'm alone in saying that first Trump administration was something that left us all feeling deflated.
I would say when I examined that, I always thought it was so unfair because he was constantly fighting. I mean, I just every single day, I think most people assumed that, okay, you fight, you win, now you're the president. Now the media is going to want to applaud you and want you to do well because you're the leader of the free world. Hmm. And that wasn't the case. I think for the first time ever, it was every day they kept the pressure on, new scandal, this person's coming up, this person's saying this. And I think that probably surprised him before he could even properly become accustomed to being the president of the United States. He was constantly having to fight everywhere. So I was able to excuse that because I feel that we were very much a part of fighting that. We were fighting the media with him, fighting the fake news media with him. This time, though, fast forwarding to today.
He kind of disproved that with the second administration, right? Because he came in all guns blazing with a team of crack troops. You know, he came in with his Praetorian Guard. And it was something that some of us had been saying, you know, we saw it in action. You can just turn around and say, and, you know, get on with it. Mm-hmm. And he did. And so that, you know, if anything, left us feeling a little bit more robbed about the first administration, because it's like we did this hard work to get him in the first time. It was not easy to persuade Americans that this was a realistic proposition. I mean, I mentioned I had to persuade Anne. I mean, I really had to persuade her. She was very upset by what Trump said about Ted Cruz's wife, for instance. And now we would kind of barely think twice about a comment like that from Trump. But at the time, it was just not the sort of thing people expected to hear from a presidential candidate. So, you know, those of us who were out giving speeches and the rest of it, we were doing a lot of work behind the scenes as well, doing the best that we could to kind of get the people we knew had a lot of firepower, you know, behind this. But we sort of robbed of progress there and then robbed of a whole election after that. Thank goodness we thought at the beginning of this administration, things now seem to be happening. Things are getting done now in a way that, you know, they should have been the last two times. At least that's what we thought.
I genuinely am trying to process what's happening with this administration. Obviously, this is Israel. We have been infiltrated by Israel. I'm wondering if maybe we were always infiltrated by Israel and we just weren't paying attention. But the first remarkable fumble, and this was shocking to me because Trump, generally speaking, has good social skills and is able to read a room correctly. I would say that, right? For him to come out and say, why are we still talking about Jeffrey Epstein?
Was and if a you're still on it, I don't want you as supporters?
That I just go, is somebody tweeting for him? Do they have something on him? Is he actually sweating bullets? Because the Trump that I know is smarter than to try to gaslight his supporters. So what is your read on that when he did that?
When he said, so here's the thing. The grand, you know, pedo theory or whatever, this idea that there are elites wielding extraordinary power in the shadows, using evidence against each other of whatever, who have, this is not a conspiracy theory. This is how every civilization in human history has become at the end, at the late decadent period, just before things collapse. Mm. It is not unusual or crazy or right-wing or lunatic to say, I kind of think there might be a secret cabal of like powerful pedophiles running the world. That's exactly what happens in every empire in history. It's what happened in Rome. It happens in all of them. So it isn't weird or strange that people would imagine that might be happening now. Mm. As our civilization looks as though it may be crumbling. It's just not weird to think that. It was also a central plank of MAGA. It's why 2016 happened. It's one of the three or four things that made 2016 happen. This idea that the Democrats in particular, although probably we didn't want to know too much, but you know, or maybe we did, but you know, probably some people on our side too, but mostly the Democrats, celebrities, politicians, all the rest of it, were in cahoots with people like Jeffrey Epstein, doing backdoor deals, not passing laws or not running institutions for the people, but rather for their own enrichment, engorgement, and power. And they all also happen to be wrapped up, if not in outright pedophilia, at least in sexual degeneracy and so on and so forth. And this is kind of a rump of people at the top of society, the elites, who live basically beyond consequence, who live free from worry about the terrible things they do, things that would end the life of anybody else, because they are insulated by this, by the world in which they live and everybody looking out for everybody. That strikes me as a demonstrable fact of reality and not necessarily anything too great. So this is a plank, along with the border and a few other things, free speech, that become the motivating social energies behind 2016, why it happens, right? Why Trump is possible at that moment, why people are open to voting for somebody so unusual in politics, why people were prepared to take the risk. Epstein is the key that unlocks the secrets, the secret architecture of our world, the way in which power is structured and operates over all of us and over and for its own benefit and for the enrichment and engorgement and protection of a couple of people. He represents in one person everything that we worry about, that we fear, that we strongly suspect is happening and that we're probably right about. He's a symbol for all of it. And it's for Donald Trump, who we had previously assumed was somebody who just got us when nobody else did, to turn around and say, I don't understand why people are going on about this. I think it's just bad people, my former supporters. If you're into this, I don't want your support.
Ugh.
When I heard that, my response was very simple. Okay.
Yeah, mine was a bit more
more expletive.
I just was like, I said this to Tucker Carlson a few days ago. I would have preferred you saying F you. Nana na boo boo, you can't touch us. We have so much power. Because then I would have appreciated the honesty.
At least be mad.
I would appreciate the honesty, but gaslighting us, like going back to this Sigmund Freud
pretending
technique.
Pretending he doesn't know.
Pretending you don't know why we're upset. Mm-mm. You fully know why we're upset. You fully know why this matters. In fact, it was your administration, people that you've now put in your administration, who have communicated the importance of Jeffrey Epstein. Your sons did it. And so there was just this moment where I wasn't just frustrated, I was angry. I was actually angry. And then the stupidity, which is required for supporters to believe, when Pam Bondi then looks over and says, we don't know if he was working.
Come off it, love. Wouldn't
you rather than they just say F you? I would prefer that.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
And it's more respectful to just say F you.
It is. And at least with F you, you can say, well, there must be a lot going on. I'll talk to you when you've calmed down. You know, like at least there's an opportunity to circle back and to forgive and to assume that something must be, it's like, you're going through a lot, you know, like something, mm-hmm. give us something to cling to, but no, cold, calculated, repeated. I don't want you. Okay. This was a betrayal, not just of his supporters, their priorities and his own promises, but it was an attempt to deny one of the reasons that he got elected in the first place and pretend that it didn't exist. And this is a level of lie, a level of audacity that is so disrespectful and so outrageous and so extraordinary that it leaves you wondering, all right, what have they got on you? What's going on?
There was something about the gaslighting too that for me felt very academic. And what I mean by that is just in my life, in my experience, you find these people who believe so much in their degrees, right? We rule over you because I have a master's degree in this and I'm smarter than you.
Blind faith of credentialism.
Yes, credentialism. Without question. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you right now, the blue collar people are smarter than them, okay? These people would die if they had to go out and hitch a tent in the forest. Literally, they wouldn't be able to survive on basic skills.
Or even do a middle class job, be a travel agent.
They wouldn't be able to do any of the stuff, right? Common sense is so much more admirable. And when he said that, he basically looked at people who have common sense, right? Who recognize what's happening. They maybe don't hold the degrees of, you know, your ilk, people that graduate to, you know, from UPenn and their sons go to UPenn. But they know what Jeffrey Epstein is, and they know what Jeffrey Epstein was. Yep. And so he lost.
And they know he didn't kill himself.
They know he didn't kill himself. And so he lost something that was almost magical about him. Again, like the ability to be a person that comes from this class of people, but to be able to speak to the blue collar worker, to the middle class. He lost that. He suddenly became one of them in that moment.
I agree. And in a sense, he took a steaming pile of, you know what, on his legacy, on his supporters, and on the underpinning assumptions that he was voted in office on the basis of, he denied who he was. He didn't just lie to us. He didn't just deny us. He denied himself too. That betrayal was a betrayal of his own movement, of his legacy. This was to say, Trumpism was fake. It's not real. It's all crazy. You're lunatics. I'm the president. Shut up. That was a betrayal of his own place in history.
Now, let me ask you.
That's why it's so unforgivable.
What could move Trump to betray himself? That's what I'm interested in now. Now it's the why. What does Israel have on Trump? What is it Israel? I think it's Israel.
Interesting leap to make, but not really. Because the last 48 hours, the last 56 hours have been the worst, to the extent that I've had a life in public life, even the worst couple of days of my life to see somebody who, and I had a bit of a wobble in 20, whenever it was, I'm not going to lie about that. I've even served other candidates for high office, in the meantime. But I began and thought that I would end my political life, or at least, the extent to which I'm in public life, with Trump. And certainly, was excited about that. You see people like Stephen Miller on TV and you're like, yeah. But to hear him in the last few days, and this is why I think you're maybe right about that country, to hear him say in the last few days that to get the message that his administration was going to deny disaster relief funds to states that don't do whatever, insufficiently
if you're boycotting Israel, if you get hit by a hurricane,
if you got Haagen-Dazs in the fridge instead of Ben and Jerry's, you know, you're screwed. And then the same day, after having committed treason in the morning, to commit genocide in the afternoon, by giving an indication that Israel would be fine to go and just annex Gaza, a place where they had been.
Which is what Miriam. And by the way, just so everybody's clear, they're also going to take the West Bank. Mary Adelson came to him and said, "No, we're not taking Gaza. We're also taking the West Bank, and we want you to look the other way. And here's $100 million. So they're currently going door to door and traumatizing people that live in the West Bank, right? Palestinians that live in the West Bank. And Trump is pretending he doesn't know that's going on. And now penalizing Americans who should rightfully be outraged that we pretend we're the leaders of the free world. You know what I mean? Everybody should want to live like us. So we've got it all figured out. We have so much high morality. And yet you look at what's happening in Gaza, and all of our politicians do not have the stomach to say what is so obviously true.
And what is obviously true is that by the time this is over, Netanyahu's Israel will have eclipsed Hitler's Germany by many, 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 many counts, morally speaking, and probably by the numbers too, because the way that that country is behaving, it's the kind of thing that people are like, all right, come on, calm down. But no, I mean it. The manner in which they are exterminating innocent children.
No, it has eclipsed it. Somebody showed that they were using this measure, Israel and their propaganda was using this measure for October 7th, saying this is the equivalent of, this would be like, by rate, killing this many people.
Oh, well, you get Mark Levine go on TV and say,
and they were like, that would be the equivalent of murdering 44 million Americans.
If Mark Levin can go on television and say that losing 300 IDF soldiers is equivalent of 3,000 American soldiers, I think perhaps we'll take the same approach to mathematics.
And now they're not doing that approach to mathematics anymore.
Yes, they've said that. But interesting, isn't it, the outcry to both, and the one that Trump rolled back and the one he didn't. He rolled back the Zionist virtue signaling, meaning, okay, fine, let's cut that bit out of the homeland FEMA terms, which they then tried to pretend.
Let's actually, because they think we're this stupid again. He just thinks everybody's so dumb.
Unbelievable.
They actually had the language on the DHS website where you were going to be denied the funds. And I'm just trying to see which line this is on. On the left-hand side, is that the Israel? Oh, here it is. Yeah, it says, with companies doing business in or with Israel or authorized by, licensed by, or organized under the laws of Israel to do business. Discriminatory, prohibited. You can't boycott these companies. Then they just delete it. And they actually went on Twitter and tried to gaslight the public. It's gone full Zionist now. They're like, we had it on the website. We're going to disappear from the website. And then we're going to say, what are you guys talking about? We never had that language. Homeland Security is now getting notes added on X for lying. Readers added context they thought you might like to know. This is misleading. DHS terms and conditions only now removed the section stating boycott means refusing to deal, cutting commercial relations, or otherwise limiting commercial relations specifically with Israeli companies. That was the language. They removed it, and the Homeland Security had the nerve to pretend that it wasn't there. That is extraordinary.
But that's the one that they rolled back, because that's the one that actually doesn't really matter. Mm. It's offensive. And it's if it had been carried through and if it had been honored, and there had been a disaster and a state hadn't been ready, and it was because of this, I think maybe you could say it's treason, bro. Just is. I think it's fair.
The threat is treason. Even having the language on website.
Maybe it is.
Because I've been careful about this word, because I didn't like it when it was floated all the time. This is treason. It almost became comical.
I'm close.
Treason.
Maybe it is.
This is the closest I've been to saying, no, actually, if you were going to deny Americans in need supplies during a time of need, because they are within their own free will deciding
it's more than bad enough. And yeah. I think it probably is that. But it doesn't actually matter because, I mean, of course, it would matter the lives if it happened. But it's based on the BDS thing is it's all virtue signaling, right? It's a leftist thing. And then if states are having sanctuary cities, something that you were elected to do, and you want to withhold funds, I wouldn't withhold disaster funds over that because that's mental. That's absolutely psychopathic. Just because somebody lives in a state that has sanctuary cities. I live in California.
Right.
What do you think? An earthquake? You know, let me plunge down a ravine?
Yeah,
like that is psychopathic. And that's what we were hoping to defeat by keeping the drunk out. But the two female presidents stopped by Trump. You can't take that away from him. But that is psychopathic enough. But that's the one. Ultimately, it's kind of virtue signaling in the gesture, you know. But the one he caved on was that the one nobody has had a thing to say about was giving the nod to Israel to effectively move in and just take over. And how recently it was. Think how recently it was that Trump, irritated by disrespect and bad behavior from Netanyahu, was signaling when he was here that maybe America would have a presence in Gaza, that maybe there would be a Trump Tower in Gaza, not to Netanyahu's visible displeasure and surprise, saying some of this stuff, right? And how quickly we got to the stage where Trump has said, yeah, just kidding, they can have it all.
I think it's performative. I think Trump's family is invested. If you look at Jared Kushner's, the money that he's spending right now in Israel, I think that's what Trump is more concerned about, which is his family's legacy. Obviously, in my viewpoint, October 7th was planned. This is a false flag. They always had the fact that Miriam Adelson came to him before.
There isn't a doubt in my mind.
Of course it was planned. Israel has connected so many false flags in the past. And then
it's not just
the fact that he's being investigated for that and they're keeping everything hush-hush. It's a national security risk about how he was feeding talking points to your country's going through this and you're feeding talking points and you're being investigated for corruption pertaining to what happened on that day. I mean, it's very obvious.
There are rabbis in Jerusalem today who are saying just this.
Of course.
There are rabbis in Tel Aviv who are saying just this. There's no explanation for the Iron Dome mysteriously not working after its flawless record. Why pilots were kept on.
He moved the troops from the border.
Right. Moved that music festival to the border so that they had lots of lovely young Nubal sympathetic victims. Why the IDF was grounded for hours in an area where they could almost hear their own family members in the nearby housing.
Why they intercepted the hostage plan.
Right.
And they just ignored it.
It is not
Egypt's warnings that there's a buildup happening on the border. Right. We're just not interested right now, actually.
Let me tell you something. Mossad knows, I like how you call it the Mossad, which is correct. They know how many American Catholic bishops are homosexuals. To the man, because I met somebody who works in Israeli intelligence who told me, oh yeah, it's 88%. I said, what? You know, 88% of American Catholic bishops. And I said, what do you mean 88%? He said, oh, well, we checked. I said, what do you mean you checked? For them not to know what's happening on their own border is ludicrous.
Again,
it is unbelievable.
And now it makes sense because when I very innocently tweeted, no country in the world has a right to commit a genocide, was it 2 years ago or a year and a half ago? And
shocking, there was controversial statement.
They were so reactive, which is such a, they knew what was happening the entire time. Oh. You know, they had their people in place and to gaslight the public, their media members in place. You had people like Dave Rubin who reacted to this tweet. Like, I said something so crazy. Like, I thought that was obviously true. We should never be supporting a genocide. And I believe that every moment of October 7th was planned, and not even just like months in advance, years in advance, that they had planned to expand Israel's border.
It's reasonable.
Same time
it's
with
possible.
What's happening in Syria. Everything seems like it was part of a broader plan. And Trump, I have to ask the question, whether or not he was aware.
What did he know and when?
What did he know and when?
Yeah, I think it's reasonable. And to try to claim that there's this blind spot where suddenly they just had a failure of intelligence. But all these other things, I mean, this is a country that has gone so far, an administration, Netanyahu's that is, that has gone so far that they're now willing to sacrifice their own citizens in order to increase their borders. Well, where do I remember that from? Could it be the word Lebensraum? Could it be a country that did exactly that? And it makes me wonder, it reminds me of why we don't give the victims of crime power over sentencing of the perpetrators. Because if the Jewish people suffered to whatever extent you know people have their own ideas about that under the Nazis, under the Third Reich, and have held on to that as a core part of their identity, their victimization at the hands of the Nazis, which to some degree of course happened, and define themselves according to that victimhood, they're the last people you want to give a gun to.
Well, or the Bolsheviks who magically disappeared and may have reappeared, laundering themselves through as like their actually were Jewish victims during World War II. And then there were people like Elie Wiesel and Robert Maxwell who may have actually been, you know, working for other people doing demonic things. And then they just said, oh, no, we were victims, too. That's my perception. We know understood. For a fact that some of the Bolsheviks were protected in Israel and these people were mass murdering Christians, you know. You start to ask the question that can't leave you. Right. When you have this spirit of just murder and lying and deception gaslighting.
But you're encouraged by the mythology that despite the terrible things that you do, you are history's greatest victims. Mm. And therefore, anything you do is somehow justified. This is why we don't give rape victims the power to decide if their rapist, goes away for life or gets the death penalty. Mm. Why we don't give orphans guns. Because we need grown-ups in the room to decide what's reasonable and to hand or to allow the acquisition of nuclear weapons in the hands of a rogue state that murders its own people by omission or commission, that has the ability to take out cities, and that believes that its people are history's great victims. This cannot be allowed.
Mm-mm. No, it's completely crazy. And this is definitively what Trump, his entire legacy is over. I think it really is over. I think MAGA is over. There's no question. I mean, MAGA with Trump, I guess, leading the movement is completely over. What MAGA will become in the future is kind of what the question is going to be, because we're going to have to pivot and recognize whether or not we can emerge as something else. But I want to talk about that after I throw it to some of our sponsors. First and foremost, Riverbend Ranch, you guys. If you haven't heard about Riverbend Ranch, it's time that you did. Their beef has more flavor and tenderness than any beef I've ever tasted. The Angus herd at Riverbend Ranch is not your average Angus cattle. 35 years ago, using ultrasound technology, the owner of Riverbend Ranch began scouring the nation to identify specific purebred Angus cows that genetically produce a much higher level of marbling and tenderness than normal Angus cattle. After over 30 years of careful selection and breeding, Riverbend Ranch developed beef that has notably superior flavor and tenderness. They take great pride in the humane treatment of their herd. The cattle spend their days in the lush mountain meadows of Idaho and Wyoming. They're raised without the use of artificial growth hormones or antibiotics, and they age the premium beef for 21 days. It is real American beef, born in America, raised in America, and processed in America. The beef is shipped directly from their ranch to your home. You have to absolutely try the meat from my friends over at Riverbend. Go to riverbendranch.com right now. You can use promo code Candace at checkout and you'll get $20 off your first order. Trust me, you are going to be very impressed. So visit riverbendranch.com, promo code Candace. Also remind you guys about Paleo Valley, something that my team and I are always craving are their beef sticks, specifically the ones that are from my friends at Paleo Valley. Paleo Valley makes their meat sticks with 100% grass-fed beef sourced from small-scale regenerative American farms, so you can feel good about what you're eating and what you're supporting. They've stripped out all the junk, no preservatives, gluten, soy, sugar, dairy, or GMOs, just clean, nutrient-dense fuel the way food was meant to be. So whether you're road tripping, working late, or running around with the kids, these sticks deliver high-protein energy without the crash. Keto, paleo, carnivore, doesn't matter. Paleo Valley works with your lifestyle, not against it. They have bold flavors, including original, jalapeno, summer sausage, maple, bacon, and teriyaki, so there's something for everyone with over 55 million beef sticks sold. Paleo Valley is trusted, proven, and backed by a 60-day money-back guarantee. Right now, you'll get 20% off your first order at paleovalley.com/Candace if you use code Candace at checkout. Again, paleovalley.com/Candace, promo code Candace at checkout. Okay, I want to kind of get into what everybody else, the MAGA originals, the patristics of MAGA, if you will. Steve Bannon tweeted, I don't know if we have his tweet, which I thought it was very interesting, but he tweeted essentially Israel first. Obviously, everyone's recognizing that as it pertains to what they tried to.
Meaning it, I think, as a criticism.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. Yeah. He said Israel first. Yeah, I should be clear. Tongue in cheek, Israel first. And in response to this FEMA policy, they obviously, Israel first. He sees him shaking hands. Trump has finally betrayed America. And yeah, there was this revolution, which I'm proud of, by the way, because I think it shows that MAGA is not a cult, that people are outraged, that he is not a king that we will say, that this is, he's gone way too far. But it's not the only thing that happened. I want to get to this, and you are the right person to speak about it. I remember watching clips, and Skylar, if you can find a clip, please pull it. You went to Berkeley University and they tried to kill you. Okay. Literally, Milo Yiannopoulos went to speak at Berkeley University a very long time ago and they tried to burn the place down. I remember they were throwing chairs through windows and there was a fire. They started a fire because they did not want to hear a person that was supporting Trump speak at their campus. It was insane.
You have no idea. Now I've left the homosexual life behind me. I will never be able to do this now. But that night, I had planned to wear a resplendent Native American headdress as my outfit. It was the climax of the tour. I was going to talk about cultural appropriation. It was the most marvelous outfit I can now never wear. But they did about $20 million worth of damage to Berkeley and the town. My favorite moment, which none of the press covered for reasons that will be obvious to you, is above the Wells Fargo cash point, the ATM that they ripped out the wall, there was an anarchist sign on the wall with the words "Democrats, you're next," which nobody remembers and nobody covered. But the level of anarchist fury was quite remarkable. Yeah,
it was interesting because that was a moment where I think people realized that, and this whole non-Sidney Sweeney scandal that's happening right now is kind of adjacent. But there was kind of this anger at the idea, the early MAGA movement, of white people having a place in society, because they got really used to kind of tailing between the legs. You should feel angry and you should feel guilty for being white. And kind of got on stage and said, no, maybe we shouldn't feel guilty. It's really interesting that Trump is in office and he is actually doing a lot to effectively create his administration DEI policies. The one thing that we're supposed to be going after, right, as MAGA, saying this is actually not okay. But he's doing it for Jews, okay?
Yes, it's true.
This recent situation is absurd, okay? You go to school, sometimes you get into a fight. So, and nobody expects the federal government to immediately get involved, okay? But this is what happened. Pam Bondi, within hours of a Jewish man, by the way, a Jewish man being shoved by a girl at, I think it's Florida State University, that's correct.
How wounding.
They got into some sort of a tiff. We don't know. We know that he had his phone out, so we're not going to be able to see the full thing of what started it. He's wearing an IDF shirt. She says something to him. They get into a back and forth.
Not a provocation at all, by the way.
Right. Yeah, they're committing a genocide. Maybe it's...
Four days previously, we have the headline that they're just gunning down civilians lining up for food.
Mm-hmm. Hunger Games.
Literally. And whoever's fault that is, the soldiers, the people in charge, the sergeant, the government, BB, whoever it is, they're doing it.
Right.
For you to go out in an IDF shirt, bit much.
It's a bit much.
Bit much.
I would say. So somebody said something to him at the gym. It was a woman who said something to a male student on campus at the gym. They get into a tiff. I'm going to show you the horror of what happened here.
Oh, no.
Everybody.
Oh, no. Is it very graphic?
It's very graphic.
So
he's
like
going to get brutalized.
You know?
Here's the clip that required a federal level response.
From
take a look
Attorney
here.
General.
Israel, free Palestine, put it on Barstool FSU. I really don't give a You're an ignorant son of a bitch.
He did the LeBron James there. Still holding his phone.
This is the kind of vicious, deadly assault that has become all too common. No, please.
And then what happens is somehow Randy Fine, who's openly genocidal maniac. He's gone a bridge too far for AIPAC.
He's got just the morals you would think when you look at him, doesn't he?
He laughs when he sees Palestinians that are starving. He somehow gets this clip and he alerts Harmeet Dillon. All I know is that within a couple of hours, Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of the United States, issued a tweet. And here is what she says. She says, "Thank you, President McCullough, for your leadership and prompt action. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Florida or anywhere else." And then she thanks civil rights. She thanks attorney. She thanks Dylan. And then she thanks the U.S. Attorney Jack Keegan. They said they are all investigating this. So we cannot get Jeffrey Epstein's binder. We can't get a response for that. It's taking a long time to figure out who the clients were.
One arrest one, not one arrest in any of the things that the president's voters care about.
But they had this girl doxxed, her full name on the internet. They had the police involved.
There's a whole ecosystem of lovely people who are out there ready to ruin your lives if you have the temerity to object to somebody wearing a shirt that bears the iconography of a foreign army murdering children.
Right. That's what happened here. And Pam Bondi got involved, and we're supposed to think what?
Hasn't
they got involved
great?
Because they were worried about discrimination, or they got involved because this entire administration only cares about Zionists and they're actually creating DEI policies for Jews.
It's not just that, but it's the language too. Thank you for your leadership. This is the kind of thing you say in wartime. It's the kind of thing, you know, when somebody issues a proclamation that declares the freedom of the whatever. No, just relax. You're being the level of absurdity gives me hope in a way, because as you know, most people under 40 and everyone under 30 thinks this is insane.
It's insane.
Insane.
Could the university not handle that little shove? Did the kid even need to report it to Randy Fine? Did he need to upload it? Like, did he survive something? I'm sorry. Kids are being murdered while they're trying to get food in Gaza.
That is when
the federal government really speaks up to true violence. A boy getting shoved in a college campus.
For their leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you for leadership. This is disgraceful, disreputable, despicable. It is a shame that for once the young people in this country have more of a moral compass than the old, which is not true of every electorate all the time. Really true. I mean, maybe it is more true than we like to admit as conservatives. Perhaps it is. But your time is running out, you people. You are on borrowed time as it is. Randy Fine is an artifact of years gone by, when you could speak about, because they're Muslims, and because, and some of your viewers may not like this, I'm sorry, but because pretty much every American president has proven their toughness credentials by murdering a few of them. A few million. Pretty much every American president comes into office, wants to let people know they're serious, kills a few million Muslims over and over and over again. Is it any wonder that some of them have the opinions about America that they do?
But why are they chanting death to America? Because we're killing them. We're responsible for death with our weapons and our funding.
For decades, we've been murdering them like it's nothing and treating them like subhumans, like people who don't have. And frankly, I'm sorry, Muslims and Jews, both people of the book, if we have a relationship as Christians with any other faith, we have it as much with Muslims as we do with Jews. Frankly, some of their morality and some of their prescriptions about daily life have a lot more in common with a traditional Catholic than any Jewish teaching I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And yet we treat these people as though they are animals in foreign countries to be exterminated when it suits us financially or in any other way, and to then protect a foreign country, not ours, and its logos and its supporters from reasonable outraged responses by fellow students in this case, with the language, the elevated language of statehood. Thank you for your leadership. It's disgusting, but I can't help but think they got 10 years of this left. And then it's over.
I think it's less than 10 years.
Hopefully.
I actually think that's why they're speeding everything up right now, because they recognize that nobody's falling for this anymore.
Ramping up.
I mean, another thing that Trump did that was fraudulent was pretending that he was going to, first order of business, I'm going to rescue TikTok. And I knew it's instantly TikTok, apparently that Gen Z and beneath had a moral compass about Palestine. And they said, we've got to get it under control. And then Trump goes, don't abandon TikTok. I'm going to rescue TikTok. We're not going to get rid of TikTok.
And he didn't mean He didn't mean from the anti-Americanism. Mm-mm. He didn't mean from the Chinese propaganda. He meant from people telling the truth about the Middle East.
That's what he meant. And so this is who they have now installed. Let's take a listen to this hero. She will be in charge of hate speech at TikTok. Take a listen.
Oh, but back to the good old days.
Yeah.
After my sophomore year, like many of my friends, I had a summer internship, a Goldman Fellowship at AJC. I came to work each morning as Israel engaged in one of the larger military operations of my lifetime, Tsuketan, Operation Protective Edge.
There we go.
That
not
summer,
even in English,
I realized how impactful my Jewish upbringing and education was. Ugh. I simultaneously realized how passionate my own Zionist identity had become. I knew the well-being of Jews worldwide and the security of Israel would be issues of lifelong importance to me.
Has she mentioned America yet?
I grew up in a traditional Jewish household.
Just amazing. Mm-hmm.
But in an untraditional decision, after graduating from Michigan, I made Aliyah and enlisted in the Israel Defense Forces. I spent the next 2 years serving as a Matzikat Shirion, an instructor in the Armored Corps. To many, this might seem like a contradiction. For a woman who identifies as liberal and progressive to be a Zionist so committed as to join the IDF, for me, these two identities go hand in hand.
Intersectionality.
Yeah, what do you think about her leading...
What the heck?
Moderation policies at TikTok.
What did we put Donald Trump in office for? If we are back to the bad old days of 2014, 15. Next, she's going to be telling us about the wage gap. She's going to be telling us about campus rape culture. It seems you can get away with any degree, any kind of skullduggery. You can get away with any sort of wickedness if you will only call yourself or have yourself identified as a Zionist. Mm-hmm. You can do anything, be anything, say anything, mm-hmm. If only you will spend a year in the IDF. Well, yeah. I'm sorry, but that kind of hypocrisy, that kind of shallow and outrageous and disgusting sort of papering over of wickedness is a thing, I hope, of the past. We fought those battles and we thought we had won them, but we are going to, because just look, if you're watching this disheartened, and I understand why you might be, just cast your eye over the social attitude studies that are pouring out year after year, showing the most colossal swing away from support for the what is now a rogue and wicked state of Israel.
The problem is that they're murderous. So I think about that and I'm like, this is great. Like the public sentiment is shifting and we understand what's wrong with Israel. But then what happens? They're going to start brutalizing Americans. I mean, they've showed they don't care. They'll kill a baby. They don't care. They will literally kill a baby and say there was a tunnel underneath its crib.
I have no doubt that the end of the state of Israel, which must come, will be accompanied by great horrors. But this is a state that is no longer any good even for Jews. Mm. Because I'm watching her and I'm looking at, you know, the expressions of our own politicians and I'm feeling more anti-Semitic. You know, my whole life has been a war against anti-Semitism, my own. You know, like I'm trying not to hate people, but everything in my body is making me go, you know? And I'm losing that fight, people. Like, I'm losing it.
It's hard not to have a humane response to watching children being born up every day.
And it is not.
And then to have people the Barry Weisses of the world trying to tell you that it's not happening. You get so angry. You get so angry with the lies. And why? Why are you allowed to lie? Are you allowed to gaslight? Why are you allowed to pretend that what's happening is okay? And not be, by the way, effectively chased out of society. Instead, she's being awarded.
We have a phrase for this, righteous indignation. Yeah. And it is that feeling that you have when your compassion is ignited or your sense of injustice is ignited. Mm-hmm. And then fuel is added to the fire by somebody telling you that you're crazy or that actually the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are the good guys.
Yes, that's what they're doing.
And that's exactly what's happening. And you know, it's. I can't help but feel, as a natural optimist, that the absurdity, the heightened ludicrousness of all of this must surely portend the end, at least in America, of the support for this stuff. And within a decade, it's going to become awkward, if not impossible, for a politician to say they support Israel. It will happen very fast when it happens. It happens little by little and then all at once. Mm-hmm. When we look at Israel, I think I fixed the problem, by the way, the Middle East. I think I've solved it. So the creation of State of Israel is a colonial error. It's a colonial mistake. They should have given them Vermont, you know. But Britain and America create this state and they create an intractable problem that can only be resolved by the death of everyone. You know, it can't go on. I think a colonial problem has a colonial solution. And the only way really to deal with this is the one thing nobody wants to do, send in troops, not necessarily Americans. I think probably Britain should bear the brunt of this since this is Britain's original sin. I think that the state has failed, that Israel is no longer a going concern as a state in 2025. Both sides, the Israelis and Palestinians, have demonstrated they're not capable of self-government. I think Britain needs to take over the sovereignty, autonomous rule of that area. And I think the British Army needs to maintain the peace there and turn it into something like a giant UNESCO site where anybody of any faith can come visit wherever they want to go. And the whole thing, the Holy Land in Christianity, which by rights, the whole region is probably Orthodox Christian anyway. But anybody of any faith can go anywhere, and the British Army is there to guarantee the peace. And hopefully in that way, people will not feel, hopefully that will reduce the horrors that are surely to come from both sides, if an external major power backed by all the others is once again running the region. It seems to me to be the only solution. Basically, you move pretty much everybody out and turn the whole thing into a giant museum.
Yeah.
Because the creation of the state in the first place seems to me to be a riddle with no solution. It's a puzzle with no answer. And the only way to address it is to undo the mistake that was made in the first place.
Yeah, but then where are those Israelis going to go? Because I personally, like, people that turn the other cheek when they're like murdering children is not, I wouldn't want them as a neighbor. Like, personally, I'm just saying.
Listen,
and again, I want to be clear, it's not all Israelis. Like, obviously, the Haaretz has been every day hitting at all of the lies. And obviously, they want Netanyahu, but many of them are okay with what's happening. Too many of them are okay with what's happening in Gaza. I think the majority of them are okay with what's happening in Gaza. That's terrifying. I don't want that person as a neighbor. Any person, I don't even want the Americans that are supporting us as neighbors. I'm going, okay, where should we send these people? They can't be here. You can't be here if this is your guiding philosophy in life, that it's totally acceptable to mass murder children and to shoot them and to look the other way when they're trying to get food, to block aid, to allow a starvation campaign to get what you want. Yeah, no, you need to leave America, by the way. So that's where I'm at.
Yes, I think it's fair, but it's also it's quite a large area of territory that's under dispute here. It's a big place. And I think space can be found for everybody. And it's not like Israelis haven't had to move before. They had to move when they left Gaza a while back. You know, now they're now saying it was a mistake. I'm not suggesting everybody needs to move from where they are currently. But if there were an external power who were back running the place, whose responsibility it was to keep the peace, and who made it very clearly understood that the slightest act of violence toward Brits or anybody else would be met with brutal and deadly force.
But the issue is that even though they aren't the most powerful state, I mean, they're not the biggest state, but they are the most powerful state is what I would say. Israel is. It's because they have ran the most sophisticated blackmail campaign. I mean, they have blackmailed. I am shocked even when I'm going into stories like about Emmanuel Macron, there's randomly an interjection of Israeli blackmail
honestly, for people who can control the weather, they're not very good at PR. I don't know how, that joke, but I don't know how good really the Israelis or the Jews who care about this stuff have been at any of this. They can temporarily intimidate somebody into saying something that person does not believe for an easy life or financial advantage or political advantage, but it doesn't persuade them. It doesn't make them believe that. It just means that they know what they ought to say if they don't want any trouble, or they know what they have to say if they want certain advantage. It doesn't actually persuade anybody. I think that the battle that really matters for Israel is not one happening in Gaza, but it is in the hearts and minds, as they say, of people all over the West.
Right.
And that battle has been comprehensively and forever lost.
That's true. That
it's
is very
over,
true.
It's done. You will never persuade the coming four generations of Europeans and Americans that Israel is anything but a rogue, murderous, reckless, and wretched place. It's done. It's over. You lost.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if Mike's going over there and praying on the wall anymore.
What are you doing? In fact, if anything, the more of our politicians we see over there, the more we hate the whole lot of you.
It's going to be a litmus test. It's going to be literally, we are not going to elect any politicians that support this nation.
I believe that. I think it's going to become a liability, and then it will become impossible to admit for politicians, at least in public. And under those circumstances, if you're sort of crypto Zionist at that point, where you can't say it or vote for it.
Crypto Zionist. Fantastic.
If you can't say it or vote for it, then what does it matter? But it's done. It's done. It's over. You lost. You lost the war for the West's good opinion. And you did it as victims of the Holocaust. How did you screw that up?
Well, they used that campaign and they seeded us.
How did you mess that up? Because of that, actually.
It's ironic. They did so much in terms of Hollywood producing so many Holocaust movies. They made sure it was in our textbooks. It's a part of growing up in America, learning about the Holocaust. And I think that they thought that that would extend to them the ability to execute this in broad daylight. And people go, oh, well, it's the Jews. But the opposite thing happened. People said, that's a Holocaust happening right there. Well, and you guys are the ones that are executing it. We actually knew when we saw a Holocaust happening, we knew because you had so ingrained in us the liturgy of the Holocaust. So it kind of backfired on them in this like this way that's it's almost like a poetic justice in a way where okay,
by providing that anatomy of evil, right, we knew it when we saw it.
Yeah. So you can't
trick
us.
I think it's true.
I've seen the movies. I know what this is. You are the thing.
And you know what's incredible about it? When you talk about the movies and evil in the movies. Like most people, when I started my career on the right politically, I kind of reflexively went along with the Zionist thing. I mean,
same.
Because I didn't really care too much. And it wasn't relevant. Seemed like a cost of doing business. Didn't really care. Mm. Wasn't really paying attention. And that's on me.
Me as well. I was working for PragerU. I had no idea.
Right. That was on me.
It didn't seem like a big issue. You know, I was like, BLM's burning stuff down. I don't really care about Israel.
But one day I did start paying attention. And when I did, my opinion changed dramatically. And I started to notice something, which is, you know, maybe our friends, you know, followers of Muhammad, they're a little hot under the collar sometimes. Maybe they get a little over emotional sometimes, and maybe they commit acts that are impossible for me to wrap my head around. Suicide bombings and things like that. And maybe some of it is motivated by religion. A lot of it's politics and, you know, going on. But one thing I've never seen from a former, even people who were in terrorist organizations, one thing I've never seen from any Muslim freedom fighter or former, you know, jihadist or whatever, is the glint in the eye, the sparkle in the eye and the smile that just creeps across the side of the face when an IDF soldier recalls the carnage that they caused and the lives that they took decades previously. And they're still attached to that memory in a way that gives them not just joy, but a kind of vicarious, delicious pleasure. And that level of cartoonish movie villain sociopathy, you don't see it on the other side of that conflict. You don't really see it anywhere.
I've never seen it before until this conflict.
I never saw it until I started watching closely. So I started paying attention. And you get those videos of the IDF guys who are in their 60s and they're talking about the stuff they did. I've never been so frightened.
Mm. It's scary. That's what I'm saying. I don't want these. I don't want these people living with me. I don't want to live near them.
Maybe we shouldn't have given them Vermont.
That's why I say it goes back to like when you learn about what the Bolsheviks did and what happened thereafter and the mass murder of Christians. It gives Henrik Yagoda, and like we do know that Israel protected a lot of the Bolsheviks. They did. It's just a fact. And they do that now. They welcome these people in and say, "Oh, we'll protect you if you say that you're Jewish. You're allowed to commit these acts." So eventually, you're going to have this culture of psychopaths, right?
And it does seem to be fostering
a culture of psychopaths. Yeah. And they need to, by the way. If you know that your end goal, you're Bibi Netanyahu, and you know that your end goal is that you're just going to commit a mass genocide, you want to make sure that you are fostering a culture
and
of psychopaths.
Win,
because a normal person is going to be outraged at seeing children, no matter what you say about these children, no matter how many tunnels you pretend are under each one of them, a normal, humane response is going to be, this is unacceptable.
Taking out this trauma from Hitler that may not even have affected you at all, let alone personally, and visiting it on penniless brown children out in the sand, you know, is unspeakable. And it does feel like maybe it's what's happening. And it's the glee. They get off on it.
I really do.
I'm sorry to say that because it sounds like a terrible thing, but I don't see it in the videos of Third Reich soldiers. I don't see it in the testimony at Nuremberg. I don't see it in anybody I've ever seen from any army or anyone who's had to take life. I mean, you and I have both had a lot of private security in our lives, whether we've had Navy SEALs or we've had whatever. When they talk about lives they've taken, they go real quiet. Mm. Those guys, you know, people have been out and done like 18 tours in Iraq or whatever. They go real quiet when they have to talk about that stuff. I've never seen anything like it outside of the movies.
I think about what it would be like if you had to wake up every day and just murder children. Even when I think about the settlers who take the land, they are climbing over the skulls of children and babies and women. They're seeing them rotting, their corpses rotting.
Your pool is
and
built, you know, yeah.
And, you're going to build a pool there? Like, is that really what, is Jared Kushner going to do that? Is he invested there? Is that what Jared and Bogart, is the Trump legacy going to be Gaza? Because my goodness, you're going to have to change your last names because I totally plan on shaming any person that even goes to visit that territory in the future. But I want to ask you, Trump, Epstein files, he's obviously in them. We've determined that he's in them in some capacity. That was the reason for the gaslighting. Apparently they had this meeting. Trump did not deny this. And Pam Bondi said, you're in the files.
It's been a complicated relationship, right? Because we know that Epstein was afraid of Trump and thought that Trump was going to cause a lot of problems for him. And some people say that's because Trump is a Fed. You know, of course he is now as a president, but you know, that he was maybe was helping the authorities with Epstein. So it's been complicated, hasn't it, with them?
Yeah, it's been complicated, but it is interesting that Trump didn't know, allegedly, until May, that he was in the files. He knew, obviously, that he had been on the planes.
I mean,
and
you
the
knew
records.
You were there, so you knew you'd be in the files.
Right. Well, he wasn't on the island. But right. What do you think? There are people that are watching this and they say, Candace, you're so stupid. Like, obviously, Trump's been involved in stuff that's no good. I actually truly do not believe that Trump is into children, which some people have alleged.
No.
What
no
do you think
that.
It is
no
that he's hiding,
that.
Though? Because he suddenly doesn't want people talking about the files. So what is that about?
Evidently, the operation around Epstein is protecting the same people who are currently shilling for Israel in the Middle East and who have done so much to destroy and impoverish and weaken and cripple and corrupt this country. You know, we need to know. We need to see the files because we have to know that we were right. Mm. We have to know that we tore up the norms of politics to elect somebody wacky. We loved him, but he's wacky. And took that huge risk and will be punished for it. I mean, you can only imagine what's going to happen next time Democrats get in. We have to know that we did it and that we were right. Mm. We have to know that there really were people doing this stuff. And everything that you see suggests that that's the case. The Diddy trial, for instance, was clearly about getting the tapes that incriminated powerful Democrats. Mm-hmm. And after they had those tapes, James Comey's daughter, the prosecutor, Maureen, they lost interest in whether Diddy was even guilty or not. Mm-hmm. The prosecution themselves asked for the judge to take charges off immediately before the jury goes to deliberate because they know they didn't even get close to proving that stuff. And so he gets convicted of a couple of the minor charges, you know. The guy might well be a real piece of work. And most people assume in the business that he is. If so, why didn't the government prove it? Because the Department of Justice had no interest in finding out whether or not he was raping and drugging people. All they wanted was the tapes so that the powerful people on them weren't in any danger.
I actually... Yeah, they wanted the tapes that apparently he had tapes that they didn't know about, but he was a total operation. I think Kanye told the truth about that.
I think so too.
Yeah,
I think probably the full extent of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. But you know, these ops do go rogue, and, mm-hmm. and if he had tapes that they didn't know, whatever.
He did. He had extra tapes that they didn't know about, and so, they wanted to get their hands on them.
Right, so they go and get them back, mm-hmm. and then they kind of, you know, phone in the rest of the trial, which is maybe their thank you for being such a good operative, you know, mm-hmm. phoning in the rest of the trial. And you know, frankly, the job that the Justice Department did, he should probably get a pardon because he did get justice. He did not get a fair trial. Anyway, point being, that whole spectacle, that whole embarrassing collapse of justice there. Another example of how even now these actors can put their finger on the scale and make things happen when they need to. Why is Trump doing this? What they got on him? First of all, I think you're right about Miriam Adelson. I think it was the cost of being president again. Is when the call comes and the bill falls due, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Irrespective of the public opinion. And, you know, he's not running for president again. What does he care now, you know? They'll get over it. You know, people will be cool in a couple of years. And maybe we even will fall back in love with him for some other reason. Not impossible.
I don't know. What he would have to just be like, I'm canceling federal taxes.
Federal income tax, but that's
And I think I'd still be angry about the Epstein thing.
We'd still be angry, but if he did cancel federal income
tax. Almost going back. No, give us the Epstein files, but like,
he's got some levers left to pull.
He's going to have to cancel.
He's got some levers left that he can pull that might just.
It's the only one I could think of off the top of my head that I'd be like,
Might just
maybe
if he really did lock her up.
Maybe if he no, but I don't even care about it anymore.
No,
because
no,
they're
no,
corrupt both sides now. It's like it's just everybody can go to prison. I genuinely don't care.
He was right, by the way.
Lock up Hillary Clinton when like Netanyahu, you're like dapping up Netanyahu, doesn't really do anything for me anymore.
No, nobody cares.
I don't care.
And I think he was right actually when he said to Rogan that it wouldn't have been the right thing for the country. I think it's right. We have to face the awful truth that Trump might be great on a bunch of different subjects, but he is bought, paid for, owned, and operated on this one. And sometimes, this one, now and again, when you got 100 million you can donate to a presidential candidate, this one can trump all others.
Right.
And so it is, I think, a matter for the electorate to simply refuse to nominate and elect people with these views, because to give Trump his due and his credit, he didn't lie to us. He didn't tell us he was going to do something else. He has made he did not promise or suggest that he was some kind of Palestinian rights activist. He said he was going to look after Israel, and he did. And maybe we didn't want to know what that would look like at the time, and maybe we didn't want to think about how that would be, and we couldn't have anticipated what Israel was planning then,
right,
what they were up to. But he did tell us. And so maybe the job now is to simply make it politically impossible to run for president or run for Congress and be an unreconstructed Zionist.
Right.
Only we can do that, because they're not going to do it for themselves.
Well, I don't know what timeline we're in right now, but Hunter Biden is making more sense. Hunter Biden is apparently telling us the truth about Jeffrey Epstein while Pam Bondi and Donald Trump are lying.
Hunter Biden,
the second piece of his sit down with a podcaster, I'm blanking on his name right now, Andrew Callahan
from
is
Channel
his name.
Five, I think.
From Channel 5, here is Hunter Biden discussing Jeffrey Epstein and whether or not he killed himself. Take a listen.
You know, do you think it was like a suicide?
Mm.
Epstein?
Mm-mm. Nobody does. I mean, really, except for all of a sudden, Kash Patel and Dan Bongino. Nobody thinks it was.
He knows the names to cite.
You have that renowned doctor, a coroner, that did the, what's it called?
Postmortem autopsy.
Yeah, the postmortem autopsy.
I don't know if that's what it's called.
Who talks about all the different, you know, the different fractures in his neck and how it was impossible that he could have done that.
You can't.
Sounds really sad now.
He does.
Settled, you know?
What?
You can't commit suicide. No.
He exactly.
And you he can't says yourself to death, even if you hate life.
Yes, exactly. It is, that literally is an impossibility and a fiction. And there's this idea that what he did is like he leaned
really
forward. Well, none of it matches up. There's that guy that just testified He was interviewed that was in the cell next to Jeffrey Epstein's, and he said it's just absolutely impossible that he would have been able to do that. Now you have the tape that comes out, and it's not just 1 minute missing from the tape. Yeah. It's actually 3 minutes from the tape has been overwritten.
Well, you know, why do we have to hear him saying that?
That's just crazy.
Secure facility in the country.
Well, that just that alone. You have someone that everyone absolutely knows that if anything happens to him is going to be, you're going to be accused of a gigantic cover-up. And he dies, and the guy that is his co-conspirator in France, what's his name? He just happens to, you know, commit died in mysterious ways in prison. And, you know, the woman who's living in Australia, you know, she commits suicide just before the... I mean, like, I... Look, again, I'm feeding into the conspiracy. But clearly, I mean, who believes that he killed himself?
I have to say something.
What's going on?
He knows whereof he speaks because he comes from a Democrat dynasty. And if anybody knows about murdering your way to the top, the Democrat power families.
Exactly.
But two or three little policy adjustments, and he sounds remarkably like us. And I have to say, is Hunter Biden the true heir to MAGA? Maybe.
the unexpected heir to MAGA.
Listen, if he keeps talking like that and he makes just a couple little adjustments, I'll vote for him.
Crazy. I mean, I'm watching this interview. I've watched the other one. I'm like, he obviously doesn't care about anything anymore. He is dropping F-bombs, going after George Clooney, going after his own side. Yeah, he lies about his laptop and you can see he's uncomfortable. The parts of it where he just like says things about his dad and you forgive him because you're like, hey, he loves his dad. Like, he's just like, my dad's great.
Nobody's ever mad.
Nobody's ever mad at you for loving your dad. Okay. But it's just crazy that Hunter Biden is
up
there.
He knows the names, doesn't he?
He does.
He knows exactly. Cash and Dan Bongino, he knew exactly the names. Dan Bongino.
Okay, but that's another thing. Okay, you have a different opinion of Dan Bongino. Most people, people in MAGA land really like Dan Bongino.
I thought it rhymed with vagina for a very long time. And in fact, once he got into office, I realized I was right.
But you think he's just acting.
I think that years ago, in a random interview, he was asked by somebody, I forget who, what's the thing you care about most in the world? And you think he's going to say his kids, or he's going to say our Lord Jesus Christ, or he's going to say this out there. He says, the state of Israel. Like,
oh, he said the state of Israel.
Yeah. It was years ago. He's one of those. He's always been one of those. He's like a weak person's idea of what a tough guy looks like. He's a mom blogger. You know, he's a podcaster for Trump moms. He's got a face that looks like a partially clenched dog's rear end. He's weak, looks weak, sounds weak, and since the moment he got into office he has acted pretty weak, hasn't he? Dan Bongino, try to go 2 days without looking like you can't cope with the job challenge. Impossible. Like, give me a break.
So you think it's all performative?
Not only is he bought and paid for, but he's also not up to the task that he has accepted. It is a matter of a morality and character. When you're offered a job that you know you can't do, you should graciously and gratefully decline and maybe suggest something you'd like just as much. But when he was asked, do you want to be deputy director of the FBI? Come on.
They just cared that he was pro-Israel.
He should have said no.
What about Cash Patel? What's your take on that? Because he was saying all of the right stuff before he got into office. People thought he's going to dismantle the deep state. He's really going to do day one.
It's a perfect example of the kind of person that I would never have trusted in a million years, because he's always been a panderer. When he was on those podcasts, he would push explanations just a little bit beyond the facts. He would make statements that weren't quite supported by all the evidence, or he would constantly gesture toward things he'd seen but couldn't tell you about. Mm-hmm. It was always pointing at something just out of reach and saying, well, if you'd seen what I've seen, you'd know I was right. And from that, constructing, and telling people exactly what they wanted to hear. Is it any wonder he's doing it now? Is it in office? He's just got a new audience now. His audience now is the FBI. So no, I'm not surprised. I think they're both disasters. I think they're both foreseeable disasters. Bonnie is obviously a lightweight who's hopelessly inadequate to the task of being Attorney General. The original excuse for why the Epstein files didn't come out when they were supposed to was that she wanted to do it as a surprise to the White House until presumably she saw the president's name plastered through the files and realized she couldn't. Amateur hour, amateur hour, amateur hour. These three names are embarrassments. And it's all, I don't mind Pete Hegseth. I think he's okay. I can't stand some of the pocket squares and whatever. It looks like you're dressed by his 5-year-old, but it's not so bad. People sometimes are. I think you should wear this one, Daddy's like, okay.
That's sweet.
And if that's how he gets dressed in the morning, that's the only reason it would be okay. But I actually kind of don't mind him. I think he's sort of giving an okay job. He's probably not doing most of the real job.
I will say I knew him when he was at Fox News, and he was a solid guy.
Right. Yeah. He seems okay to me. And that's an example of where I think MAGA gets it right. Getting a true believer who's fundamentally a good guy. And maybe some of those job functions need to be delegated out to people who have a bit more nuts and bolts experience of certain things. But basically, he's fine. The other three I just mentioned, eminently foreseeable catastrophes.
Mm. What about Steve Bannon? I know he's not in the administration, but I definitely have been looking at a lot of his stuff lately because, like I said, at the end, you start looking at the beginning, and Steve Bannon was so right about everything when MAGA, he understood MAGA, he understood the populist movement. He was in Trump's ear. And now I'm just wondering, how do you perceive the relationship between him and Trump? Because Trump still speaks with him, but he doesn't seem to be doing anything that Steve Bannon is saying and the things that Steve Bannon is expressing.
We don't speak as often as we used to, but I have great respect for Steve. I like Steve very much, and he's rarely wrong. Mm. I think his analyses of things are good. And the thing I think that Steve has, which I've always admired, which is something that you see in great priests, is you can go through hell. You can hear the worst that humanity has to offer. You can be presented with the most pessimistic fact pattern in the world. Steve will find a way within minutes to chart a course to victory that sounds plausible, that's exciting, that you could think, okay, all right, okay, okay. It's very powerful. And so I think he's very underrated as an orator, as well as being a great strategist. More often than not, right of everything. And Steve was never like to the best of my recollection, I mean, we were at Breitbart together working very closely for years, but to the best of my recollection, he was never a big Israel nut, you know? I mean, he's a pragmatist, you know? He would probably say a Leninist. So I think he's seen the writing on the wall and said something about Trump that many of us are feeling. You know, Bannon is not the power that maybe he was once, but he remains one of the most intelligent and interesting and usually correct commentators and strategists that I think we have.
Who do you think has Trump's ear right now? That's kind of an interesting question, because you're just wondering, someone who hates him, clearly, obviously, right? I mean, someone who hates him has his ear and is telling him to do all the things he shouldn't do,
to tweet all
the things that he shouldn't be tweeting. Mm. Never Trump is surrounding him. He's the fact that he's promoting like Mark Levin. It's like literally these people absolutely detest you. And they somehow, it's almost like a humiliation
ritual.
When he
said tune into Levin, I quote retweeted it with in your dreams, cankles.
Because
it had just come out about his big swollen legs. Mark Levin, you know, this is a family friendly show, so I actually can't talk about Mark Levin. I can't see any path through this where we don't get you in trouble. I think a man who has capitulated, who has sacrificed his honor and his integrity, who has outsourced his agency, no longer requires the company of true believers and supporters. He is in the state where he'll do as he's told and accept what's around it. And we keep seeing these people, don't we, in the press footage when he's coming off the helicopter and whatever, these faces we haven't seen before smirking in the background.
They hate him so much. They hate him so much. They're like, aha, another humiliation ritual. Tell your supporters you don't want their support anymore. That has to be what's going on.
Unless you have a knife at Ivanka's neck, like, what else would justify this? You know,
I feel like that's what I want to think. I want to
believe that all the kids are in a dungeon,
exactly, and then we can understand what he's doing and what he's tweeting because he loves his children.
And he's being texted pictures of his children crying.
Yeah.
And then maybe okay.
And Netanyahu's like, do the thing.
Not Don Jr. because he wouldn't care, but maybe Eric and Ivanka.
Which is funny because everyone thought in the future, okay, Eric Trump is going to run or Donald Trump is going to run. And now, obviously, I think those chances have been completely annihilated given what's happened. But what do you think about J.D. Vance? I find his silence to be quite loud.
I have a feeling he's going to really pleasantly surprise us all, because I think the expectations for him were so low. He's a creation of Peter. People are always like suspicious about, oh, he's a creation of Peter Thiel, without really explaining what it is about that that's bad.
I could explain things about that that's bad.
I know you could.
Sure. I mean, Peter Thiel, I put him in the same class as like an Elon Musk. I mean, they have this futuristic vision. It's a technocracy. I mean, I personally don't think that people that in their own lives hold tradition or the nuclear family, that they should have positions of power, because for them, they want to create things like, you know, we don't need women. We're going to create an artificial womb. We're going to have all. It just scares me.
I was very unsettled by Peter Thiel's answers in that interview with the New York Times.
Oh gosh, do you have that, Skylar? That was hilarious when somebody called.
Huh? Do you want the human race to succeed or something? And he's like, I was
that's
very
what I mean.
Very uncomfortable by that, for sure.
They're like robots.
100%.
The robots are here.
But the people he's put forward haven't been that bad. I mean,
but that's what they need. They need the person that you believe in.
Yeah, okay.
And I will say thing that makes me, and I have not met J.D. Vance, so I'm usually a person that I like to meet someone in person before I enter in a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that just looking at the story of J.D. Vance, there is, and this is something that Mark always says to me, that is this like the Obama thing where it's almost too good to be true. Mm. He's changed his name a few times. He was a senator, but somehow was able to get this book deal.
He's got this rags to riches story. And,
it's not really rags to riches. He's had a family that's been around for a long time. And also he gets this book deal, and like Netflix does a deal with him. Like, why did they pick this obscure senator? Again, I'm just at the point right now where I don't trust anybody. So I'm not saying this because I'm actually dismissing J.D. Vance. I'm saying I'd like to have a further conversation and sit across from him and ask him these questions.
Your radical skepticism is
skeptical.
Is what the moment calls for. Mm. It is the most rational position.
Right? Thank you. That sounded so brilliant when you said it. My radical skepticism is actually the most rational position. Thank you, folks.
It is what the moment calls for.
Yeah. Like, we shouldn't trust anybody at this moment.
I'm just a dreamer, Candace.
Seriously.
I'm an optimist. I've got to believe that he's going to be all right.
But you can't, how can we trust the J.D. Vance? I mean, what do you think about Elon Musk? I've been calling that out from the beginning. I'm like, this guy is very clearly
we have
a
no
fraud.
Real way to know about Vance. We have plenty of ways to know about Musk. And Elon is, I mean, the future he wants is not the future I want. And the future he wants is not the future any of us really want.
But all of them are successful because they did deals with the state.
I sort of feel
so
like,
what are we doing here?
I sort of feel like, based on what we know from Elon Musk so far, that Mars is just going to be a giant brothel. Mm. You know, he's got like a 4 or 5 year old's kind of teehee mischievous approach to kind of like pornography and to and stuff like this. He named the AI on Twitter that's for kids. What is it, Rudy or something? And then it's like Bad Rudy is the adult one, so they're almost called the same. Almost like you can make a mistake. You know, like I don't like some of that stuff. Mm. I think it comes up and flirts. You know, it goes about beyond flirting with the line, really. I think Elon Musk has sex problems. Which is not.
What gave it away? Could it have been the 97 baby mamas?
Okay, but I mean, like, above and. All right, okay. All right.
Wow.
But above and beyond just a billionaire, I can do what I want with whoever I want, and I've got the weird baby thing. I think he's got, like, some real serious sex.
To me, you can't be a leader of anything if you don't believe in the nuclear family. That is my opinion. That's my position now. That to me is a personal litmus. Where's your family? Do you believe in family?
I agree with that.
Your model for family is, well, we can create an artificial womb and we're not going to need this in the future because everything's going to be robotic.
It's not. Good.
And your car is going to be able to and give just, birth to your child. I'm going to hit pass.
Just look at the people it elevates. Ashley St. Clair, who is, you know, who becomes briefly, you know, this sort of.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. She won.
No, she did not. Her name will forever be synonymous with opportunistic womb renting.
You know what? I don't like. I don't. The only reason I actually have to defend her in this moment is because one thing that I just do not agree with is everyone pretending like Elon Musk on his like 22nd
so, child
didn't
do with
know
Elon
how
Musk?
Babies were made. They're like, no. She trapped him. I'm like, everybody stop acting like Elon Musk is a 4-year-old. Okay. Like, he knew exactly what he was doing.
I don't think he
had the resources.
Trapped. He wasn't baby trapped, but she did post 5 years previously. That she about wanting to she posted 5 years previously that it was her intention to ensnare. She didn't use that word, but
it looked like she was saying it in jest. First and foremost, and the second thing is
how peculiar
Milo,
that then
if
it
you
happened.
Could find that tweet. You don't think the person who owns Twitter could find that tweet? I'm sorry, he's not a victim. Well, we're not making Elon Musk a victim.
He didn't know about it until I resurfaced it, but I don't think there are any heroes in that story, by the way.
Yeah, it's Jerry Springer. Okay, this is ghetto. I recognize this.
I do agree.
It's Jerry Springer, and because he's got a lot of money, we're not recognizing.
I just find her profoundly unlikable. But okay, we can move on. When for centuries in Europe and then in America, there is an expectation that anybody who runs for president is going to be a married person with kids. Mm. I think there's something very valuable about that, something cohesive, healthy, wholesome. I think absolutely necessary,
right.
100%. If you are seeking to lead a country like this, you're not coming in just as an innovator. You're coming in as a guardian, as a protector, as a caretaker also. And so to show that you understand and have respect for the building block of that society, which is the nuclear family, and to show that you put your money where your mouth is, that you demonstrate, you know, you practice what you preach, that you too are a participant in that institution. Mm. And therefore, you're going to take care of everybody else's affairs as though they were your own, I think is necessary and reassuring. So I completely agree.
Yeah.
With the exception of the clergy, I really don't want to see anybody in public life that's not in the family.
Mm. I agree. I totally agree. And even with Elon Musk, by the way, the majority of his baby mamas, he used IVF, which I find to be quite strange and futuristic and weird.
Well, because... Well, I mean, his army of mids. who knows? But
they all seem like droids to me. I can't explain it. The whole AI.
Did you say joyless?
Droids. Droids. I feel like they're partially not human. I don't know why I feel this way.
One or two of them is employees as well. So like one of them is working in AI or something. So
Sam Altman. They don't have a look to them. Already. They have a look to them where I just.
It's called ugliness.
It's not even. It's like there's something in the eyes that I just don't trust. I'm like, I know that you want to turn me into a robot, and I cannot buy or invest in anything that you're selling.
If you were to drift off, you might wake up with an implant.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
They talk about the future and how great it's going to be, and all we have to do is give them our brains. Look at that. I don't trust that. And well, I just don't know about these AI bros.
That gay guy, the OpenAI one with the buying
Sam Altman.
Buying babies, people trafficker. We mentioned another people trafficker, a much fatter one, Dave Rubin earlier. Those are the people that tend into the obvious and ostentatious evil for me. But that quieter, weird, unsettling thing that you've noticed about Elon's baby mom, yeah, for sure. I see it too.
Yeah, something just makes me uncomfortable. All right, I want to get into some of you guys' questions. I also want to ask you about whether or not you think Trump is going to pardon Ghislaine, because I think he is.
Yep.
But first, I want to throw it to Nini.
It's the only way the stories can end.
Exactly. And yeah, I've got so much I can say about that. But first, tell you guys about Nimi Skincare. As many of you guys know, I love Nimi Skincare. Just when I think their products can't get much better, Nimi launches their brand new tallow line, and it's sold out in under 3 hours. I called them directly, and good news, it's finally back in stock, you guys, but only while supplies last. So if you don't know, tallow is incredibly similar to our skin's natural structure. That means the essential vitamins A, D, E, and K are bioavailable and easy to absorb. It helps repair the skin barrier, locks in moisture, and delivers powerful anti-inflammatory benefits. Nimi takes it a step further by infusing their tallow with natural essential oils, which makes it even more luxurious and effective. Their two new products are the Sunshine Tallow Cream, which is a lightweight whipped face cream that absorbs quickly, perfect under makeup, and their Buzzin' Tallow Balm, which is a rich balm that forms a protective barrier to seal in moisture and deeply repair your skin. Nimi Skincare is proudly American, conservative-owned, and grounded in the values of faith, family, and freedom. It's skincare for those of us who want our dollars to reflect our values. I already love Nimi, and I'm proud to support their mission of creating cleaner, better-for-you skincare. These new tallow products are just the beginning, so don't wait. Head to NimiSkincare.com and use my code Candace10 to save 10% on your order. Start supporting companies that stand for what you believe in. With Nimi, you're not just getting beautiful skin, you're getting skincare without compromise. Again, that's Nimi Skincare.com and use my code Candace10 at checkout. Also remind you guys about American financing, because if you could delay your next two mortgage payments, why wouldn't you? Imagine putting those two payments in your pocket and finally getting a little breathing room. It's possible when you call American Financing today. If you're feeling stretched by everyday expenses, groceries, gas, bills are piling up, you're not alone. Most Americans are putting these expenses on credit cards, and there does not seem to be a way out, but American Financing can show you how to use your home's equity to pay off that debt. You need to call American Financing today before you get to a point where you can't make those payments. Their salary-based mortgage consultants are helping homeowners just like you restructure their loans and consolidate debt, all without any upfront fees, and their customers are saving an average of $800 a month. That's like a $10,000 raise. It's fast, it's simple, and it could save your budget this summer, so don't wait any longer. Call American Financing today. The number is 800-795-1210. Again, 800-795-1210, or visit AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. Okay, I'm going to get to some of your guys' comments, because I know that I have book club tonight, and I'm probably... But I do want to just ask you very quickly.
Somebody sent me some tallow soap.
Was it good? Tallow's fantastic.
Honestly, it was. Yeah.
The tallow is fantastic. They used to make our French fries.
I've said goodbye to ashy. I have.
Just a white people infliction.
Well, yes.
Ashy.
Okay.
We can help.
I occasionally do suffer from this, being African American myself. And I don't
it is an affliction.
I am both ashy and ungovernable.
Ungovernable is definitely our affliction.
Yeah.
Okay. Ghislaine Maxwell, very quickly before I get to people's comments, he's obviously going to pardon her. Do we agree?
Of course he is, right. Because it's the most despicable thing he could do.
Right. So if we're just at that point, can we just all accept that? He's already moved her into a prison cell with Elizabeth Holmes.
Oh, he's good.
Which
he's
I don't even think it's a real prison. She's like jogging around.
The Theranos girl?
Yeah.
Oh. So basically,
who her father
Club
was.
Fed. She's in Club Fed.
Do you know who her father is?
No.
He used to work for Enron. Don't get me started on the Elizabeth Holmes rabbit hole.
The guy that's bought the Enron Twitter account is so funny.
Oh.
I think it's the guy who did. If you find Enron on Twitter, it's so funny. He does these things like these spoof products, like a egg shaped nuclear reactor. It's just funny, like kind of weird surreal humor. It's the same guy, I think, who came up with the birds aren't real thing.
Oh,
he bought the Enron handle on Twitter, and it is my favorite thing.
Okay, I'm gonna have to look that up. But yes, he's obviously going to pardon Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yep.
And she's gonna go to prison camp.
There were no crimes.
Exactly.
Surely.
Actually, logically, it makes sense to pardon her, since there's absolutely no crimes and no victims.
There's no list. Was she in jail
for? The poor children of this world. The more I learn about the elites, it's sickening. Looking into the Emmanuel Macron story. Did you watch Becoming Brigitte?
I did, and not only did I watch it, I watched it twice.
Male or female, Brigitte Macron? Circle.
I have Look, I watched it very, very closely. And I watched it with a critical eye because I wanted, you know, respectfully and privately to talk to you about a few things. But I am persuaded.
Right.
I am persuaded.
How could you not? I'm like, if you say that you don't think that Brigitte Macron is a man, I have to accept that you didn't watch the series.
I am persuaded. And right. I haven't even read Xavier's book yet. But
wait till you get to that. We barely scratched the surface.
I am persuaded.
It's unbelievable. Everyone around me is involved in trans and this.
There are things that cannot be explained, or rather that they should have been able to and should by now have easily done.
So easy. Before you get to the point where you sue someone, here's my photos of me growing up.
I don't believe that I know of, not just that I have lived to see, but that I have ever heard of or that I know of a bigger PR blunder than the Macrons suing you for this. Because prior to that, viewers of this show will know that Candace, despite being a phenomenally successful and extraordinary woman, is sometimes excluded from the coverage she should get by some of the more snooty establishment press, so she could break a story and everybody could know about it. Everybody knew Candace broke it, but you might not see it in the New York Times or on CBS. But you will now, yeah. because they have got every prestige media outlet in the world to repeat Candace's conclusions or Xavier's reporting and your conclusions, you know, the whole thing. And so now the person who is most responsible for spreading what they say are, you know, hateful and terrible, is them.
Right.
And to sue you, and we'll maybe get into this another day, we'll have some fun with it, but to sue you to reach over the border as a head of state,
that's crazy.
And to sue a black woman after France's history in Africa.
What they did to us in Africa.
Both of us. no, but I mean, people don't know this. There's 12 countries in Africa that still have the colonial franc that pay a portion of their GDP every year to the French treasury. They still have an empire.
France just won't leave the Africans
they
alone.
They won't leave black bodies alone. The latest black body that they wish to exert control over is Candace and her big gob.
You will not colonize me, Macrons, okay?
But look, these perfumed ponces from Paris reaching over the channel and seeking to clamp their hands over the...
That's exactly
the
what's happening.
Chattering more.
It makes me sick.
One more. I mean, haven't gay men taken enough from black women?
It's unbelievable. I mean, Emmanuel Macron.
Their gestures, their sayings, their body language, their all this, and now you want a freedom too.
By the way, speaking of homosexual males, Emmanuel Macron, which is, you get into this if you read the full book, which we're going to probably get into as we go into the second season. But what's remarkable is how he didn't sue when people were coming out saying that they slept with him. People who were talking about how they were a part of these like sexual charged political parties. Men that said that they slept with Emmanuel Macron, they did not feel the need to correct the record and to sue those individuals who had spoken that way. And yet this, for some reason...
Until a black woman did it and came for the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it's 1770 all over again. Mm-hmm. And French aristocrats are chopping bits off black people because they don't make their quota or because they say the wrong thing.
They will not colonize me.
They will not colonize
me. Okay, let's get into some of these comments. We have people that are writing in. Let's see who we have up first. All in, right? How is it that the Macron's attorneys are able to launch their lawsuit against you from the studios of CNN? So true. Is this a CNN broadcast arm of the pedophile network? And last, but certainly not least, we declare war. I mean, yeah, it is crazy that Tom Clare was ready to go on CNN, but I can also tell you guys, we know this for a fact as well, which will come out when we file a response to the lawsuit. They were shopping for crisis PR firms in America before we launched our first episode, before we dropped our first episode of the series. They were in communication with us, and yet they knew that they needed to go out and get ahead of it with PR. What does that tell you?
I might be wrong about this, but given the length of that complaint and when they filed it, I kind of feel like they probably had that in the chamber, or at least they were writing it while the case was going on in Paris with those two ladies.
Which
they lost. And when they lost that would have been the moment to say, listen, to paraphrase Lady Bracknell, to lose one defamation case looks like carelessness. To lose two looks like she got a ding-dong.
Yeah.
Because to come to America and to lose, as they surely must, a defamation case, I saw episodes where she is saying, please answer our questions. Where she is saying, if you can prove this, why don't you? To try to prove, as they will have to, actual malice, meaning they've got to prove that Candace knew it was a lie when she said it and intended to hurt and defame and damage. You can't. She's on air asking you to respond to a request for comment.
And they said, we don't have to answer your questions. And people are going, oh, you don't deserve her blood. We didn't ask for your blood. We were like, yes or no. Did you used to live as Jean-Michel Trogneau? Did you used to go by the name Veronique? It's just incredible to me that they're pretending, like we said, we would fly to France, get their side of the story. We will take your evidence. Here are the pictures of her pregnant. Here are the pictures. And we could have been your PR firm.
They wouldn't send blood back, but they are coming for their pound of flesh.
They are coming for their pound of flesh indeed. Amal writes, thank God pushing you to your own platform. You're changing the world. And I'm happy that my daughter can watch someone who looks like her have such an extraordinary impact. Thank you so much, Amal. I appreciate your support. Vishan writes, they, referring to Israel, are going all in because they know that when the boomers are gone, mainstream propaganda is finished. Yeah, they have bots on Facebook that are incredible, like these little IDF bots. And it's because you can tell they're trying. The only strength they have is in the boomers. Right, they're
almost
like
as
we
sophisticated as the Kuiper bots.
There's so many bots, and I'm like, every time you try to say anything about Israel, the bots swarm in. It's because they know they need the boomers. Like it was as soon as the boomers are no longer here to defend them.
Even the
boomers though are changing up their mind about Israel.
They need that chilling effect, you know, where if you post it, it's going to be a headache. It's going to get demonetized. This is going to happen. And then the people who do like me are going to see me getting blah, blah, blah. That sort of stuff has never bothered me, but it does bother most people with some good reason. Like nobody wants to, for 5,000 people on the internet saying they're an idiot. Nobody wants that.
Right.
The chilling effect that has on what people say, what they're prepared to say, and how they say it is significant. It's real.
Bots are a psychological game.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're the only person that thinks this. You're all by yourself.
Exactly.
And
it's
that's
real.
Not true.
It's real. And even if you're not usually frightened by that kind of thing, it still somehow at some point is going to stop you posting something you otherwise might have or should have, even if you're somebody like us.
Marcy writes, I appreciate Milo bringing up the UK original sin. By this, he means the Balfour Declaration. He also mentioned the Jewish insurgency in Mandatory Palestine.
Yes.
It's not a question. Yeah. It is a comment. Anders Lovebrand writes, it's too insane. Think a lot about the gift that Trump got from Netanyahu, the golden beeper. That was sick. It's just disturbing. Even like the signing of the missiles, like it's so psychopathic. You have to be a psychopath to support Zionism. Like, why would you go over and sign bombs that are going to kill children, Nikki Haley? Why are we doing this thing? Like Mike Johnson, to go over there right now when the entire world has accepted that this is a genocide, to go over and to put on a yarmulke and pray on this remnant of a wall that, by the way, is not, don't even get me started on, like, even they've lied about the history of that wall. It's actually a
and
temple.
And then to start this old canard, this Protestant nonsense about Israel in the, Bible and, we're told to blah, blah, blah. Starting out that old chestnut again, compounding propaganda with cruelty, with lies. It's too much. Yeah, it's too much.
Totally agree. President Nixon's revenge. I don't think I actually finished that person's sentence. Too insane to think about the gift that he got, the golden beeper. Also, the drones over New Jersey. That's some military people speculated was looking for nuclear material that had gone missing. Yeah, we never got an answer about those drones.
Oh, the UFOs
weird.
Or something? Was
Yeah, we never had an answer. Remember the drones that were above New Jersey?
I mean, a lot of weird stuff happens in New Jersey.
And we just kind of moved on. Yeah, there's a reason for that. President Nixon, trust me, a bunch of people just tried to murder me from New Jersey.
I lived in New Jersey for 2 years, and they were very strange years. It's a peculiar place.
It's like a little Israel, actually.
It is in places.
President Nixon's revenge. Candace needs to add a lot more airtime to Epstein. Trump can release all the thousands of Epstein files the DOJ has now. These files are not sealed. They can redact all the victims' names and the photos. Yeah, the excuse they're giving is they're saying, oh, well, it's child pornography. That's why we're not giving it to you.
They
obviously,
have thousands
they're lying.
Of pages of interviews with people that could go out now.
They could absolutely do that. That is a fact. And it's also a fact that they are not going to do it because Trump's friends are implicated and because Israel has occupied America. America's an occupied nation. I just see we're all clear. Let's say it again. It's occupied. We do not have real governance. Everything is contingent upon Israel. And it's been that way since they shot JFK. Who shot JFK? What do you mean by they? I'm talking about Israel. Stop with your little taboo games of like, you can't say it and trying to correlate Israel to Jews. By the way, in another episode, we should really discuss even them conflating Judaism, trying to say it's an identity as opposed to being a religion is a trick. Okay.
Oh, ridiculous.
That's a trick as well.
Ridiculous.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
Like, oh, well, now you can't say anything critical.
If that's the case.
Now I'm trying to complain the country. Now it's like I am Israel if I. The Pentateuch, the Torah, thou shalt not kill. What are we doing here?
It is belied by the history of Judaism, the faith, to say that it is only a faith. I mean, the Jews in Spain in the Middle Ages effectively invent racism for the modern era. Because so many Jews are converting to Christianity, the rabbis are like, what are we going to do about it? Well, how about we say say it's in the blood? You can't really stop being a Jew. You can only sort of pretend, whatever. So that'll help. When we go in history from talking about tribes, ethnic groups, to talking about race, it's a Jewish invention. And it's central to Jewish identity. Another time, for sure.
Well, Wallace says, can Jews themselves be anti-Semitic, or is that just called telling the truth at that point? Which is very good, funny comment. But yeah, it's ridiculous that we're now saying the truth is anti-Semitic. Makes absolutely no sense. Anyways, in closing, I'm going to do another sit down with you because we have so much to talk about. Yay. We didn't really have past beef. I just didn't know who you were and didn't think that Ye should work with you.
Let me take this. Candace sent my present employer, Ye, Kanye West, some messages that I wasn't very happy about. And so I know that there will be people who love her watching this being like, but didn't he tweet? At the time that Candace did that, with the information that she had, she was absolutely right to look after a friend.
And in
the time that has passed since, I think we got to know each other a little bit better.
Yeah.
I just
didn't know you, and I just was kind of like, I don't trust him at all. Let's not start this again.
I don't know you. All right.
I don't know you. Don't cry. How dare you pretend not to know me?
I have to say, Candace, no hard feelings because at the time that you sent those things, you had a great care and love for somebody that I have since grown the same affection for. And at the time, on the information that you had, I would have done the same.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And yeah, we have much to discuss about Ye. The reason I first contacted you is because I want to talk about Hollywood Babylon. By the way, guys, in about an hour, we will be doing the book club. We're starting The Assault on Truth. And there's, what's that? Oh my gosh, I'm running so late. I literally have to go, you guys. So I will, 15 minutes, probably gonna be running 15 minutes late for book club. All right, you guys, I will see you then. Thank you, Milo, for joining.
Okay, God bless.